Good afternoon. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to a slightly truncated edition of Midday. Today it's Midday on the Law. We're talking about the big news of the day, the Supreme Court hearing that we've just shared with you NPR's live coverage of. Started at 10 o'clock this morning. My guest is the legal scholar, author, and University of Baltimore law professor Kim Whaley. Her Substack is called The Little Law School. She's also a legal commentator for ABC News and a terrific friend of Midday for many years, and she joins me on Zoom. Kim, thanks so much. This is a busy day for you. I appreciate your time.
Always great to be with you, Tom.
So the Supreme Court has rejected the argument that Donald Trump is making about birthright citizenship in the past. What did you hear today on behalf of the administration, John Sauer, who made the case for Mr. Trump's executive order abolishing birthright citizenship? How do you think he did? Do you think he convinced the justices or anybody else?
No, I think he had a really difficult time for good reason. And with maybe the exception of Justice Alito, I would be surprised if he has any strong votes in his column. As you indicated, not only does the plain language of the 14th Amendment, which says all persons born in the United States are citizens, that isn't great for him. And these are allegedly conservative textualist judges who really adhere to the plain language of the Constitution for good reason, because that means that judges aren't making laws up out of, you know, thin air. But also there's a case dating back from to 1898, which is close to the time that the Constitution was, the 14th Amendment was ratified, right? So it really gives a sense of what the people back then thought it meant, the 14th Amendment's birthright citizenship clause meant. And in that case, the court effectively rejected the very arguments that the Trump administration is making in 2026.
Tell us a little bit about the case of Won Kim Ark, which was mentioned multiple times today, both by the court and by both counsels. Why is that such an important case to this to the current consideration?
Well, he was a person born in the United States to Chinese parents. And so the argument made then, and that was a time of great hostility towards Chinese, a lot of racism, laws against people of Chinese heritage in the United States. The argument was made that even though the 14th Amendment says all persons born, he shouldn't count because his parents still had allegiance to the Chinese nation and not to the United States of America. Again, that's exactly the argument that the Trump administration is making now, that essentially what the 14th Amendment is about is allegiance to the United States. And the Supreme Court back then said no, and looked to what's known as common law from England, right? So the Revolutionary War threw off the yoke of the king, but we had to develop our own laws in the United States. And the way that was done was to borrow from what happened in England. And it was very clear, and I think even the government admitted today, that in England, if you were born on English soil, you were effectively a British citizen or an English citizen. And that's a hard argument to get around with not only the progressive justices, but also the conservatives who I've indicated take the position, it's not always consistently taken, but they take the position that you start with the plain language, then you look to see what was the idea and the meaning of the phrase as understood at the time that part of the Constitution was actually ratified. And on all of those fronts, the government loses.
Yeah, because this phrase, subject to the jurisdiction thereof, we also talked a lot about, or we heard them talk a lot about, allegiance, which you just mentioned, and also domicile, where people actually lived at the time that this case happened back in, you know, was it 1868 for Won Kim Ark? 1898, excuse me, for Won Kim Ark. What is the significance of the domicile dimension of this? Why were they so concerned with both sets of counsel about domicile?
Yeah, that came up constantly. So let's break this down a little bit. The 14th Amendment says all persons born in the U.S. and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Since the ratification of that amendment after the Civil War, subject to the jurisdiction thereof has been understood to mean, and you were born in U.S. territory. You were born and subject to the laws. It's basically a definition of what it means to be born in the United States. What Trump is saying is no, jurisdiction doesn't mean that. What jurisdiction really means is allegiance, but allegiance is not about your intent or loyalty. We should define allegiance as domicile, and we should define domicile as lawful residence plus an intent to remain. But we're not going to actually look to see about whether someone intends to remain. We're actually going to look at what lawful residence means, and that can't mean people who are illegal immigrants. So it's erecting this tortured labyrinth of step by step by step by step to get to, oh, illegal immigrants should not be considered citizens or children of illegal immigrants, I should say. If they're born in the United States, that baby, that newborn, should not get birthright citizenship. But it's so many steps removed from the plain language and a very easy, common sense way of understanding jurisdiction, that again, I don't think the justices are gonna buy it.
If you've just joined us, it's midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest is the legal scholar and author and University of Baltimore School of Law professor Kim Whaley. We're talking about the historic arguments that we covered this morning with you by sharing with you NPR's live coverage from the Supreme Court, hearing arguments in the case about the 14th Amendment and birthright citizenship. Donald Trump issued an executive order on the day he was inaugurated, ending birthright citizenship. It was immediately challenged in courts. And Kim, let's talk about those challenges. This has gone through several other federal courts. At one point, one of the judges said that Mr. Trump's argument was, quote, blatantly unconstitutional. Some of these federal court judges have not messed around when they talked about the Trump administration's arguments here. That obviously plays into the Supreme Court's jurisdiction and or deliberations in some way, right?
Right. That theme came up today as well. General Sauer, the Solicitor General, was trying to make the argument that, wait, the Constitution isn't, you need to update it based on things that are happening currently. And way back in the 19th century, there wasn't this problem with illegal immigration. So we need to sort of morph it today. And I'm quoting from the Chief Justice. Chief Justice Roberts said, quote, "It's a new world. It's the same Constitution." And so I think they're applying common sense. You don't honestly, Tom, need to be a lawyer to understand a rule is a rule is a rule. You know, when you're driving down the street, it says 65 miles an hour. If you go over that, you're out of the rule. And you know, a lot of constitutional law is really ambiguous. What is an unreasonable search under the First Amendment, or for, excuse me, the Fourth Amendment? Lots of people can debate what reasonable means. This isn't one of those cases. This is more like 65 miles an hour. And basically, Chief Justice Roberts, like these lower courts, are saying, you know, that's not our job to make new laws or to amend the Constitution. We're stuck with what we have. If you want a new Constitution, President Trump, or a new provision, you need to do what's happened, for example, with prohibition, and you need to get the states and the Congress to ratify a change to change the language of the 14th Amendment. You can't come to unelected judges and justices who don't answer at the ballot box that are there for life and they're just there to apply the law. You can't ask us to do that. And I think that's what all of these judges. And now I think the majority on the Supreme Court, or maybe even a unanimous court, is going to remind this president of, which I think is vital for a lot of reasons. He seems to have forgotten that foundational concept.
There was also a lot of discussion of Native Americans, of Indians who are, reside on reservations. Why did that come up so frequently, and how does that play into our understanding of this case?
It came up because in that case, Wong Kim Ark, the court did recognize some exceptions to birthright citizenship. One of them is for diplomats, right? For listeners who've been to Washington, D.C., you know, there are embassies, and you might see cars driving around that have the diplomatic plate. Essentially, an embassy is treated like a mini part of that country. Italian embassy, if you're on the Italian embassy, you're actually de facto legally in Italy. So the court recognized some exceptions that birthright citizenship would not apply because you really are acting within the jurisdiction of another sovereign. And traditionally, and under the Constitution, Native American tribes, there's something called the Indian Commerce Clause, even in the Constitution, Native American tribes are treated under constitutional law as sovereigns. They're treated as they're having their own sovereignty, even though they are also subject to U.S. law. And so that's why both children of foreign diplomats that are born in the United States, as well as people born on reservations or within the jurisdiction of an Indian tribe, they wouldn't necessarily fall within the birthright citizenship clause. They do have citizenship because Congress passed a statute making it really clear, just so everyone understands, people born on Indian reservations are American citizens, but it doesn't function automatically under the 14th Amendment.
We have a call from and an email from Tom in Mount Vernon. He's a regular listener. We're always happy to hear from him. And he asked whether Trump's presence at today's oral argument, because Mr. Trump attended the proceedings today at the Supreme Court, and as far as anybody can tell, no president has done that before. He wonders whether or not Trump's presence might have had any impact on the justices. And Tom reminds us that the president recently likened some of these Supreme Court justices to dogs. He's had some pretty harsh things to say about even the people he appointed. It hasn't happened before, as far as we know. What do you make of the fact that the president decided to show up?
Well, not only has this president gone after the justices, in particular after they ruled against his unlawful sweeping tariffs, but the attacks and threats to federal judges across the country have skyrocketed. And we're in a moment where the federal judiciary, when they uphold the rule of law, they are really acting as true patriots, because themselves now and their families are potentially in jeopardy because of this presidency, frankly. I mean, that's really unusual and unprecedented. So, I can't, of course, get inside President Trump's mind, but I don't think that, based on the questioning today, that the justices felt intimidated by his presence. Justice Kavanaugh didn't speak until pretty far into the dialogue with the government, but my understanding is President Trump stayed through the government's entire argument, and you would not have known that based on the questions. It was, of course, very cordial, very professional. The justices really know what they're doing when it comes to being judges. But I didn't see anything that would suggest they felt somehow pressured or intimidated by Donald Trump's presence there, even though maybe that would not be unreasonable as human beings to put a footnote in the back of their minds, like, yikes, I got to be careful what I say today.
You are a former prosecutor. I wonder your take on the legal strategy by the Trump administration, where a year ago or so, the issue of birthright citizenship came up, but they argued a different case. They didn't argue on the merits of whether or not the 14th Amendment could or could not be abolished by the stroke of a pen of Mr. Trump. They argued about whether or not federal courts could make decisions that apply to the entire country. What do you think of that strategy now in hindsight? Do you think it was smart for them to make a go of it in that regard, trying to get the lower court's rulings, abolished, and then, take on the bigger issue today.
I do, because this is such a slam dunk case against them. And they did win a big victory, really, in that case where the court essentially banned so-called universal injunctions. And just to translate that, the court made it much harder for regular people to get an order binding the government to stop bad behavior. Now, you have to file a class action, or anyone affected has to file their own lawsuit. So he won procedurally big time in that case, making it harder for regular people to challenge governmental policies, presidential policies. And even though the government didn't ask for review of the actual executive order attempting to override the 14th Amendment, the court absolutely could have taken that case, could have taken up that issue. For example, in Trump versus U.S., where it created criminal immunity, the only question below was whether what Donald Trump did in and around January 6th was immune. The court expanded it to create blanket immunity. So the court has discretion. And I was disappointed, frankly, Tom, that it didn't take that opportunity to just, make it clear this is a silly argument and we're going to stick with the plain language of the Constitution. And then so many, probably millions of people wouldn't be on the edge of their seats about what's going to happen to babies born in the United States of parents that may not have American citizenship.
Kim Whaley is a professor of law at the University of Baltimore School of Law. Her Substack is called The Little Law School. She has been a tremendous friend of this program for all the 10 years that I've been hosting. Kim, thank you so much. As you know, Midday's coming to a close, but my admiration and respect will never come to a close for you. So thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Well, it's reciprocal, Tom. I've talked to dozens and dozens of hosts, and you're one of the best in the business. We're going to miss you.
Well, thank you very much. All right, that's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, Midday does come to a close, and our final show will feature conversations with Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott and City Council President Zeke Cohen. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
You're listening to 88.1 WYPR.